Hello, loves! Welcome to the Art of Body Language podcast, where we empower and uplift the dance community while helping them understand their injuries. I am your host, Sherelle Williams, trainer and student physical therapist that helps dancers avoid injury and improve their wellness so they can be the strong and fearless performers they were destined to be. Before I begin this episode, I would like to invite you to reach out to me at theartofbodylanguage@gmail.com with any questions about injuries that you may have, or find me on Instagram at smile_love_lift. Please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. I want your feedback so I can continue to put out content that helps artists. I am here to serve you. Enjoy the rest of the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Art of Body Language podcast. Today we have another episode for our entrepreneurship series, you guys. We are talking to Rick Johnson.
What's up?
Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course, thanks for asking me.
Yes. So tell the folks about yourself.
What's up, folks? My name is Rick Johnson. I'm a creative director here in New York City. I work at the intersection of art, entertainment, and fashion. I just this January came on my 10 years here, which is super exciting. I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland.
You are the person I just interviewed was from Baltimore, Maryland.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maryland, stand up. Y'all got some great people.
Maryland, what's good? But 10 years, just this January. And yeah, that's pretty much, you know,
that was in a nutshell. That was so surface level. I invited him to tell his story and he's like, yeah, so.
Yeah, you can't like, I'm not going to crack myself. Like, you got to crack the egg.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But,
can we work for it?
Yeah.
So, how did you start? You get here.
My work?
Let's do this. You get here. It's 10 years ago. It's a warm day.
Yes. Picture it. 1986.
You packed your bags from Maryland.
So the funny thing was, is like, I always wanted to live in New York City. It was always like a big thing. I come from ball culture with the dancing, voguing.
Ball.
It's called the balls.
Balls culture.
Yeah, well, it's called balls. Okay. That's what they, we would call it, competitions.
Okay.
But I used to Vogue, and we would come up to New York City all the time when I was a teenager. But I was just so fascinated, like, with the city. I thought it was just beautiful. I was exciting, and as I just, like, cultivated and grew older and older, I just knew that I wanted to live here. It was like a weird relationship. It was like a crush. You know, I was just like, oh my God, like, yeah, I was like, I got a crush on you. But it was, I couldn't wait to live here. And it's been one of those rides, like New York has changed me in every way. But I was living in D.C. and literally I was working at Nordstrom as a visual merchandiser. And I was like, I need to be in New York City. I started styling and I was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. And I literally came up, I packed everything and literally came up to New York City and I got a job at Bergdorf Goodman. And I started working there and just wrote it out. And here we are.
So how did you get from, I've heard that name before.
Bergdorf Goodman. Yeah.
What is that?
It's a store. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's literally like a jewelry box. It's under Neiman Marcus's umbrella. It's Bergdorf Goodman and Neiman Marcus and Cusp.
Okay.
So,
I'm so basic. I'm from Florida. Okay,
yeah.
I'm like,
I love Florida.
I'm like JCPenney? No.
Macy's.
Serious?
What?
What is that exactly?
But so Bergdorf Goodman is like a jewelry box. It's the only one in the world.
Okay.
So people make retailers and designers make like special things just for Bergdorf. But I was a part of this organization called Fashion Group International in DC. And you get this book of members that are like everybody, you get their email, their phone numbers, and I just went ham, sending out the res and all that kind of stuff. And I contacted Linda Fargo, and eventually she connected me with Human Researchers, and I started Bergdorf Goodman.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool.
So, when did you go from Burdock with VG?
VG, that's what we call it.
Okay, when did you go from like VG to like I'm working for myself?
A year. It took 1 year.
Nice.
It literally took 1 year. Okay, so funny story. The funny thing is, when I was working at Bergdorf's, it was extremely exciting. Like I said, it's a fashion mecca or whatever like that. So I just came in contact with everyone and everything. One day, a celebrity stylist came in. His name is Eric Archibald, who I knew from the ball world. We used to be Milan's together, the House of Milan. Mm-hmm. And I knew him from there, but I was in Maryland. You know, he was in New York, Milan, so they were like a lot more, you know, sassy and prestige. But I saw him and I told him like I wanted to work with him, blah, 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 blah. So basically, I started like doing stuff with him or whatever like that and working in and out of the store. So then one day I met this lady. She was coming and she worked at Kohl's. And this is how like I flipped. So Kohl's would come in and shop designer product and take it back to their offices to knock off the designs for their mass production to their customers. Mm. But what they would have to do all the time is like they would have to return the clothes. So I'm talking like they would spend like 30K, 40K, whatever. So me working in studio, I would allow them to take out this bulk of merchandise, and then over time I would return it because they were using the Amex card. Mm-hmm. I could slice it up whereas though I wasn't taking a hit on my sales, but I was also double dipping because I was getting paid by them freelancing and I was working.
Oh, you had the game going.
I hustled the fuck out of work doors. So I did that, and I did it for about 6 or 7 months, build up a bag, and then I jumped and I was just like, I'm fucking out of here, bro. Like, I don't work well for others.
I feel you.
It didn't work for me in like a corporate environment. I'm not very corporate driven, you know. I don't know how to per my last email and you know, I'm not like, you know, that little passive aggressive talk, it just drives me up a wall. I'm not that type of person.
Who has the time? So,
yeah, it's annoying as fuck. And I was just like, I'm creative, and I was just like, I wanted to get out. And now it was not easy.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that I did it knowing how it was going to work out, but I feel like when you jump, you just got to trust your wings.
Yeah. Say it.
Yeah, you got to trust your wings. You got to know that you're going to fly. And that fluttering of the heart when you jump off the cliff, it's good.
Yeah.
You know, and then you just, because it makes you flat faster, harder, and then you realize that, like, I can do this, you know? And
that is such an audiogram, right? I'm like, oh my god, social media, this is, oh my god, this is the best. That was everything. I was there flapping with you. I was like,
you're
flapping,
yeah, because you have to. If you don't, you're just like, you're sitting on that cliff forever. And, you know, eventually too much time will pass and you're like, why didn't I jump? You know, why? How will you ever know?
And
you
that's know? So, I don't know why. I feel like the norm is like, oh, it took me like 7 years. And then I finally, he was like, I did a year. And I was like, oh.
I did it in a year only because my time in those spaces, I always know is very limited. Mm-hmm. Does not work. Something always goes wrong with me in those spaces, whether it be authority or, you know, working around people's constraint. And then it's like with retail, it's always sales and you're dealing with women and their husband's money and, you know, all of these things are just put in front of you that aren't factors to your magic.
Mm.
You know, and I was just like, I have to remove these things if I want to be great.
Remove the things that are not factors to your magic.
To my magic.
Corinthians 1 and 16.
Come on. Yes, Corinthians. And the good Lord said, let thine be magic. Oh. But it's those kinds of environments. And I found that working for myself, as hard as it is, mm-hmm. and I swear to you, it's nothing easy about it, but as hard as it is, I like helping me grow.
Mm.
And I like the progress, and I love all the failures. I like stumping my knee or falling or fucking something up, just to go back and be able to say, haha, I know what to do now. I know how to do this, you know, and that's what it's been like. Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it. So
Corinthians, baby.
Because you was out here preaching.
Out here dropping the good gem on the floor.
Okay. Let's pick it up.
The good Lord said.
Oh, God. I need to be doing videos sometimes. I feel like.
Yes, the physical.
Because I'll be out here doing, like, y'all need to see us acting a fool. Okay. So. Let's talk about a day in Rick's life. You wake up. What's going on?
So my days are, there's no gray. I'm either extremely busy or I actually absolutely have nothing to do. And that is my day. It's a juxtaposition that I find peace in, but also an extreme anxiety. When I'm working, I can have call times as early as like 4 a.m. in the morning. 14, 15 hour days for God knows how many days in a row. And then I'm off and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm failing at life. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I slept till noon or I slept the whole day through. But on a typical day, what I love about New York City is that there's not a bored moment. There's this romance about New York City that I absolutely love. Like, even on a day where I don't have to work, it feels like I'm still working. Because mm-hmm. being a visual person, I people watch. Mm-hmm. I go through the city. I take, like we were talking about, I take myself out somewhere, go somewhere new, travel out, I meet friends. I'm very popular, I would say, but not. I don't think I'm popular. But in the same breath that I say that, if I left here, I'll see 5 people. That and they'll be like, oh my God, what's up? You know, but it's like in my world, I don't think that. But I, in a typical day, I can always find a way to just like smile through the city and, you know, date it in a way. It's always a courtship.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, it's not always the same. You know, every day is different.
So give me an example of like this 14-hour day.
Wow.
What would be the job?
Okay, so like a lot of times I'm a union member with Film and TV, 764, which is a costume union.
Okay.
So on a typical 14-hour day on set, I would have like a maybe 4 or 5 a.m. call time. In Film and TV, we're responsible for wardrobe, mm-hmm. costumes, whatever helps the actors kind of turn on. Every piece of that throughout the day is there's continuity and when you're shooting something, we're shooting you coming through the door. So we're shooting it on this side. We have to shoot it on that side. We're shooting you walking down the steps. We're shooting from the top of the steps and down. So like when you're watching TV, all of those little back and forth moments that you're seeing the camera, all of those are continual shots. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe like an hour shooting just this one. And our job is to make sure that costume looks exactly the same as you see it. And funny thing, Tyler Perry's going through a lot of shit right now from his last film.
Cause these wigs!
Cause they're bad. It's bad.
You got so much money. It's you just bad. Spent how many million of dollars? But absolutely. We put out some
And honestly, when you see it, it's like little stuff like the lady getting out of her bed and looking for her slippers for like 20 minutes only to be seen coming down the steps without them. Those are little nuances that we get paid a lot of money to make sure.
Don't happen.
They don't happen. So that's like on the film and TV side. If I'm working, I do creative direction for some artists. Mm-hmm. Damien Escobar is an amazing violinist. Like,
ooh, yeah. I thought I've seen that name.
Yeah, Damien's just brilliant. It's just a brilliant talent that he has. And working with him is very heartfelt. Mm-hmm. I work with him on the wardrobe, but also the creative direction, what he's trying to say as an artist to his fan base. And the beautiful thing about a violin is that there are no words, there's no lyrics. Well, he covers music that we all know. You sing along with the music. A lot of time you are sent to this place of like imagination in a way. So I'll help him with that. But that's like a whole different day in a way. Like it's not as nuanced. It's more escapism. I get to get inside of his head and his heart. I get to think about what other people might be thinking or feeling. You know, it's more emotional. Yeah. But that's a you know, a work day. Now when I'm not working,
I was gonna get to self care.
When I'm not working, it's a pack of loud, it's a blunt in the house, some whiskey, and I literally, like I said, there's no gray area. When I don't have something to do, it's extreme anxiety. Like working for myself, I'm always feeling like I'm never gonna reach the top of the steps.
Okay.
Nor do I want to. You know, I always want there to be another adventure. I always want there to be something exciting, but I put that into someone else's hands, which creates the anxiety. It's not in my control. Mm-hmm. I'm always waiting for a call or an email or, you know, an invite, things of that nature. But that anxiety can be a lot. It can be a lot.
I definitely understand the anxiety, but I also am kind of like, I get the whole, you know, you have to be doing something. You know, if I'm off, then I could be watching this video on entrepreneurship. I could be doing, you know, I could be
a list of shit myself, that I could be doing right now.
You know what I mean? But I've also kind of learned that we need that time to like to meditate, to relax.
I don't.
And you're a Virgo. This is why I get
a nuanced Virgo. I'm the perfect 9-month baby. My birthday is September 1st.
Yes.
So it's like I'm always in my head in that space, and just like you said, like all of that time that I could be given, I don't give myself the time that I give others. And that's it's a relationship that I'm working on. Like right now I feel like I'm dating myself. I want to get to know me again, in a different place in my life. You know, I'm older now, I have a lot of experiences under me. I don't know who I am romantically. I don't know who I am in a love sense, you know, with other people. I don't know how to date. I'm very old school. You know what I mean? I'm like,
That is a thing.
Yeah, it's like, if I have a crush, I'm texting you once, and if you can't pick up the phone, I'm over it. I'm like, look, I'm fucking out of here, bro. I hate it here. You know, also, I'm like, hey, I like you, but I mistakenly fry you up. I'm just like, hey, fuck you, la, la, la. But I'm flirting. You know, I'm completely oblivious to that. So I'm trying to get into that space. I'm trying to be human for a little bit and just try to see, like, what's going on. Like, you know.
I totally get that.
Who am I in this capacity?
And it's a thing. Like, I can be bad in a sense because,
oh, fuck, baby.
Like, time is money. Like, I'm always, I'm always working towards something. So in my mind, if I said, let's do this at this time, or we said that, and then you can't respond, well, but do you know what connection I could have been making?
Right.
Or doing something to further
Stop
my career?
Wasting my time, that, bro.
And I made time for you? Right. Oh, you're cut. I don't have time.
And that's why I try to do that for me now. Yeah. I'm such an extrovert person. Like, as you know, like, every time we see each other, it's a great time. It's a lot of energy. We're having a good time, and a lot of times I go home and my cup is empty. And I'm figuring out ways to fill my cup up. You know, what do I need? Like, what kind of space do I need to give myself? What does my mind need? What does my heart need? All of those kind of things. And I feel like our bodies and our minds tell us if we just slow down and listen, you know? I know when I'm dehydrated now. I know when I've been drinking too much. I know when I'm smoking too much. My body tells me I'm fat. Like, you know, I've been eating too much. It's like, but I haven't been listening. So now it's like I try to take those moments of slowing down when I'm off and just saying, you know, what do you need? Like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I think also, I enjoy going back to Florida because everybody's slow. Like, I'm the only one rushing.
You get to recharge.
And so it's like, oh,
yeah.
I'm going to lay here.
When I go back to Baltimore, I would go back to my ex-boyfriend's house, and literally, people don't understand how much I enjoy laying in his bed and binge watching anything.
Yeah.
Like, sitting there, he has a bar in his house, and I will just be covers up to the chin, remote on my chest, just like sitting there, like, I don't want to move. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go anywhere. Because I don't, like, New York is just so rushed, you know, we're always in a rush. So, like, I appreciate that little time, but I don't get it enough.
And I appreciate you. I know you say you get anxiety. Like, I feel guilty. I feel guilty for turning on Netflix or watching something that is not going to help move my career forward.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm here.
It's like a binge. You almost feel like, honestly, I have this thing. When I'm not working, I can't go into the city. I can't go into Manhattan because it's so busy. People are moving around me, and it just takes one person to bump into me, and I feel like I'm in the way. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not doing anything. These people are busy. What am I doing? Just walking through, you know? But when I'm working, I'm the only person in the city. I'm flying through stuff. People are in my way, you know? And like, it's a weird balance.
You know, self-care. Yeah. It's a thing.
I know. Right?
We can't burn out.
Yeah. Right? Oh, well, yeah.
You know what I mean? So what have you found? What have you found so far in this courtship of yourself that you need?
Oh, jeez. It's a list. It's a list of things. Okay.
Help somebody.
So I recently just got a puppy.
Yes.
His name is Chrome. He's a blue-nosed pit bull. And I realize I'm a bad mother. I'm literally every day I look at this little dude and I'm just like, it's not my fault, bro. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, he'll piss and shit. And it's like, I know he doesn't know, but it's like, I love the connection of the love, but I feel like it was a void that maybe he was not supposed to fix. You know, yes. Like, what is it? What is it with me? But I realized that I need that somehow. And I think it goes back into the building me back up and going through that. But it's the puppy thing is fun. But I'm like, every day I look at him like, so you didn't come potty trained. Like, you didn't come, like, you don't have keys to the house, right? Like, you can't let yourself out. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, like, what the fuck is this? Like, and then I think back, I'm like, shout out to moms. There's no manual. There's no manual for it. And I swear to you, every day, it's just like, I came home last night, and I'm not lying to you, shit on my scarf. I have a fox fur scarf that I absolutely love. And my friend was telling me that dogs respond to you in a way that when they want attention, they'll do something to something you love. I mind you, the scarf has been in my house for. I came home last night and he shit on the scarf. And I was like, I couldn't even be mad. Because I was like, here I am. I'm at Laquan Smith's fashion show. I'm hanging out with a new artist friend that I might be working with 4 or 5 a.m. night. And then I'm coming home. This poor baby's been in the house all day, you know, by itself. And I'm just like, I suck at being a mom. I'm like, oh my God, like, I fucking suck. But it's, you know, it is what it is. But it's, I'm waiting to see what this might mean. If I have what it takes. I'm like, shout out to moms and abortion. Like, Jesus Christ.
I can't right now.
I understand.
Oh, everything's a learning experience.
It is. It is. It is. Yeah. It is. And I think that's what I'm trying to see. I need to build that. Self-confidence is a huge thing for me. Keeping that just consistent. Mm-hmm. I think age challenges my idea of relevance, like how relevant I am into what's happening around me, people, what's going on, music, politics. All of it kind of helps us stay afloat, but it also can create, like with social media, you know, depression and things of that nature are serious. And like, as I get older, I realize it's just like, fuck, where did 20 years go? You know, where did this time go? And I try to do that to keep from the depression and things of that nature. But yeah.
I got you. You know, I do a lot with affirmation. You know, yeah. Like, I wake up and I'm like, I am the best therapist for my clients.
Yeah.
I'm not a physical therapist yet, and I have no physical therapy clients. Literally. But I'm already like, let's do the work now. Get the mindset now.
Look in the mirror. Now. I'm a bad bitch.
Bitch, I got this.
Look at you. Okay. You got this.
Yeah.
And I try to do those things now just to keep me, you know, in a good space. Yeah.
It's all, you know, you see what works. You try it. It works, and it doesn't. You
go back and move on. You know? Yeah, not afraid to like keep starting.
Mm-hmm. So, what advice do you have for someone?
I don't give advice. I don't. I have conversations wherever I can help if it's received. I don't like the word advice. Because I feel like to me, advice means I figured it out.
No, I mean, I don't think advice means you figured it out. I think advice is giving your perspective of what life has taught you and sharing it with somebody else.
Well, I like that. I like that description.
Well, what has life so taught you?
There we go.
You so take the word advice with somebody else that is looking to move towards like brand building or entrepreneurship. Or a difficult goal. Like,
yeah, I think that regardless of what it is that you do, know that you're good enough. Mm-hmm. First, know that you're good enough. Know that you are an asset to anything you are a part of. You know, because regardless of what you might do, we can all be trained to do the same thing. I bring me to it.
Say it.
You know, you bring you to it. And I think that when you own that, it really helps you push. It helps you understand that doors are not going to always be there open to you. But take the steps. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, figure out ways around that. Never be discouraged by other people. Something else that I would say is fuck up. Definitely.
Period.
Definitely. You don't understand. It creates the best stories. You know, I can't tell somebody to not go up those steps.
Right.
The only way I can do that is if I've gone up there. Mm-hmm. Only to see that it doesn't end. So I can say, don't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I fucked up. I went up this step. Or I did this, I did that. But try. Go about it. Don't be scared. Like, take the fear and put it into the ambition. And it always comes out, like, good. You always get a story of it.
I'm dying over here. The amount of, like, gems that you have given me.
And it's weird because it's like you don't understand the tears and the heartache that comes from those amazing things that you can share with someone. But, you know, somebody has to go out into the wilderness and come back, you know, and tell you just so you can go in. And you're going to have the same, somebody else is going to have the same issues.
Yeah.
But it's just going to be catered towards them. But it's that drive and that knowledge that every day is going to be a different 24. Yeah. You know, you can do something else with it.
Do you have a, like a personal way of overcoming like doubt?
Yeah.
Right.
When I was young, there was this quote that I heard, and I don't know who it's from. But it said, to see the world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wildflower, hold eternity in the palm of your hand and infinity in an hour. I loved that quote from then till now. It's just, doubt comes when you just know you should. Right at the moment
rewind. Say that one more time.
Doubt comes at the moment that you know you should.
Yeah.
You know you should. And in that breath, in that moment, in that heart race, in that pulse, racing, you know that you should. That's exactly when doubt shows up. And you're just like, you're fucking right, I should. But that doubt you need, it's that gulp in your throat. But it's right when you have sold yourself. You done it. Forget everyone else. You know it's what you want. You know it's what you're going to do. Blah, 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 blah. That's when doubt shows up. And in that same breath, you figure out what's really good. And you overcome it. Ah, look at that smile.
I didn't know. I'm going to cry.
Oh, don't cry because I cry. I'm such a pussy.
Me too. And I'm doubting myself. But that's so true. I've been in that moment.
And you know just, that moment.
And you explained it so perfectly.
It's in the exact second that you know you're doing everything that you want to do, everything that you're supposed to do, that everything tells you no. And that's doubt. Right at your issue when your heart is the fullest. You know, that you just you don't question it. It's almost innate in us. You know, it's a moment that we have with ourselves. That's what a little tear.
Shut up, dog.
Yeah. So, Mrs. It is. It comes in that way.
Okay. So, what was your biggest failure, and how did it help you grow?
My biggest failure.
Or learning experience.
Yeah. No. My biggest failure was not valuing myself. And me not valuing myself has put me in some really fucked up situations. Financially, everything. I've gone through tons of things, you know. But I think that's my biggest failure. I'm not a monetary person. I've never been really rich, mm-hmm. you know, with monies or things. I've had material things and then I've lost material things. You know, I just went to Africa in November. Amazing trip, and I was robbed by a friend, like not by a friend, but a friend had someone that came back to our Airbnb, took everything, you know, and I was empty, but I was empty from these material things, and then I realized like this doesn't mean shit, and I figured that out. But it also just it comes from a place of me. It's more to that situation that it's almost like what did they say? The straw that broke the camel's back or something like that. That metaphor.
Yeah.
How was it? Yeah.
I think that's it.
But I equate that always going back to my value.
Right.
You know, what do these things define me? Mm-hmm. You know, can I live without? And it's like PTSD and it's like all of that kind of stuff. But me not valuing myself has put me in weird situations, whether it be like romantically dating below what I feel like I should date, accepting a job that I knew I was above only to have resentment from taking it and things of that nature. So it's just like, that's my biggest failure. Always, 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 always.
So true. I just had this conversation. I hope you listen to this episode. I had a conversation with a friend. She's also an artist. And, you know, she's just talking about this guy who is in the acting field. Mm-hmm. You know, has had a career, was bigger. Mm-hmm. And she just starts telling me all the things that he's done. And I'm just like, you continue to stick around and deal with this man. Because you don't value yourself. I said, one. Two, you moved to New York to make your career happen. You are spending so much energy trying to process the emotions of this man who really just manipulates you.
Yeah.
When you could be putting that energy towards your career.
She's
and making
things out her cup.
I said, go back home. You're not ready to be here. Mm. Rent is too high.
Yeah.
For you to be up here, like, oh my God.
Rent's too high in your space.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Housing, just your own space. Like, rent in your existence.
You know what I mean?
Is expensive. But it's like, you do if you don't value yourself. You find that you're in situations below you, what you deserve.
You know, and yeah. I just beg, if it doesn't help bring positivity to your life or push you forward or bring, you know, joy or something positive to other people, we're not talking.
Yeah, so it's not filling up your cup.
Start thinking like that. That needs to be the standard at all times. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? How am I helping others? Something I learned. I'm an only child.
So, oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I have a little brother. He's fat, though. He's bigger than me.
Stop it! And I mean, I remember, like, growing up and being selfish. And I got this mentor. And he just talked about, like, giving.
Yeah.
And I, like, in, like, 27 to 28, I have been obsessed with giving. Even with this podcast. Like, yeah. Slow the fuck down. You just gave me the most bullshit answer. Tell me your story. I want to listen to you. Mm-hmm. Let's talk.
How can it help? Yeah.
And I love because people are like, thank you so much for slowing me down mm-hmm. and helping me realize how much I've accomplished. Because we're always in the next thing.
I've never even taken to consider yourself. A lot of my friends like harass me because they're like, you don't post your work on Instagram and your design. And I was like, you know, that doesn't define me. Like, I'm only as good as my last job. And then soon as that job is over, I'm unemployed, you know? So it's like, I need to be full. Because if I'm not full, then when the job comes, I'm not giving it my all. Or how am I helping anyone? Help me. I need to help me so I can be like a, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely. And you know, that goes back to that self. You said it perfectly. That self-dating. Figuring out,
yeah,
you know, what you need.
Dating myself. Getting to know me again.
But you are. You know,
texting
you are.
Texting myself. Sliding up in my DMs.
Booking me with myself a massage.
Okay? Texting me like, chill little fire ass. I'm like, thank you, boo.
I am done.
Little affirmation.
But I don't like what you just said. Like, you know, once that gig is over, you're unemployed. But you helped create art. You helped create something, and you were a part of that.
That's well, I think artists have that. We artists are givers naturally. You know, we give ourselves, but we also critique ourselves. Yeah. We're also very hard on ourselves. And in the interim of job to job, you know, there is a place of just down. And I think that's where most of our work comes from. We're emotional people, but we use outlets and mediums to share it with others, and people take those, you know, whether it be the gift of speech, whether you have a beautiful brushstroke or whatever it might be, you know, there's something driven in that art that forces you to share it, because it's like we somehow are communicating to other people our pains sometime, or you know what it is that we're doing. And also we're receiving it, you know, by me putting out some beautiful art, the feedback that I may get might help me in a way, you know, that a person might not realize.
Yeah, most definitely. So let's talk about the failure. About your greatest aha moment.
Oh,
what was that?
I haven't had it. I don't know. I've had some really amazing things. I remember the first time Beyonce spoke to me.
What? Beyonce spoke to you?
We were working on her tour.
You worked on Beyonce's tour? Yeah. Can we just talk about what you've done? We're starting with Beyonce.
Yeah, I've worked with her like four times. Through Ty Hunter, Marnie Sinafonte.
I'm learning about this man just like y'all are.
But honestly, we were doing the... Marnie would come in and work with Ty and Raquel at the time. And I literally was going to get coffee. And I went walking down the steps, and she was coming up the stairs with her bodyguard, the big light skin guy. And literally, she said, good morning. And I said, hey, what's up? And I didn't even think. And I was like, and she smiled, and she said, what's up? Like, in a chill way. And I walked down the steps, and I was like, casual as fuck, you know, chilling with B. And I told my friend, oh my God, I would have lost it. And I'm like, it didn't, you know, it was just cool. But it was like, when I came back up from getting a coffee, it hit me that I was like, working with like one of the biggest superstars in the world. You know, Michael Jackson was who I grew up, you know, and I never got to meet him. I never was even in the same room, never laid eyes on him. And I used to think that like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing? I never even met Michael Jackson. But I realized that Michael Jackson was not of my time in my working.
Right.
Beyonce kind of is like our Michael Jackson in a way. And, you know, in 20 years, there'll be somebody that's coming up that's just like that. And it hit me. I was like, wow, I'm in New York and I'm fucking doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I'm working. And I was just an assistant. You know, but it still was valid to me. It still, there was this fulfillment of knowing that I was seeing something that the world had not seen yet. I was watching it be made. I was watching her create art, you know, and in the same breath, I was creating, you know, I was helping. And that was a big aha moment.
What else? I randomly saw Frank Gadsden comment.
Frank Gadsden?
I don't know what this man does, but these people are coming. So, love, what else? We're talking about you.
Love Frank.
Tell me about your badassness. Keep going.
I love Frank. Another aha moment, my passport was a big aha moment for me. My first time going to Europe, I worked with Fashion Week and the shows. I was over there. I was there for 3 weeks. I worked Milan Fashion Week, Paris Fashion Week in London, all simultaneously.
Oh, shit.
That was a big deal. Yeah, it was exhausting, but it was this big deal. My aha moments always just feel like the little black boy from Baltimore, Maryland is here. I'm in New York City. I'm here for 10 years. People always say it takes 10 years to become a New Yorker. And in January, I became a New Yorker. I never left, you know? The ups and downs, been broke, I've been literally no money. I've been in New York City and I've had on $8,000 worth of clothes. And literally had to walk home because I didn't have money for the train. I've literally been in had an apartment, beautiful brownstone. Also been homeless. I've gone through the whole thing and never left. You know, created a story, fought through all of it, and just like every day I'm just like, that's my aha moment. I'm just like, I'm still like, just still, you know, something still. I still have energy to make someone laugh and create a good time with somebody. You know, I'm still available. I still have work, you know. I've had friends come and go. It's like the whole thing. It's all the whole novel. But still, it's a good book.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why, like, I don't know. I always leave room for the aha.
Yes.
I'm waiting for something to floor me, you know? I will say, like, I say Naomi Campbell. She's my favorite model.
So you work with her?
When I grew up, I've never worked. Yeah. Okay, so I've never worked with Naomi Campbell. But I created the costumes for this film called Tomato Soup.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most beautiful stories I've ever seen, by a man named Dominic Blackwell, South in LA, beautiful story. Naomi Campbell was cast to play a role in the thing, and I had to email her as the costume designer. And she emailed me back. Floored me. Like, when I tell you, I grew up, my walls were covered with models and fashion and magazines all over. Not like musicians, but like, I was always obsessed with fashion, you know? But she's my favorite model of all time. She sent me an email and she was like, XOXO, Omi. I literally was like, oh my God, Naomi Campbell just emailed me. And mind you, she never even came on the film. But I had the email. I still kept it. But it's like, little shit, like, I'm not very starstruck. I'm always waiting, like, the shit that I tell people, they're like, oh my God, I'm like, that man's cash, you know?
It's not cash. Are you kidding me?
It's cash as fuck.
It's not my gosh. It is,
but it's not an aha for me yet. I don't know.
It's not an aha for you, but it's not about you. It's not about the people that you inspire.
It's not about me.
So the people that you inspire. So you need to tell people your story, and you need to say all these things, and you're not bragging, but like somebody will like, dang, I could also do that.
Yeah.
I could also be here.
It's available. It's right. And it's here for all of us.
So how did how do you get there? Like there?
I will say I...
Because you don't just start working with Beyonce or Frank or getting with Naomi.
You know, it's very funny. I think New York has this... New York has the ability to make you available. We have accessibility that a lot of other places don't. You know, we have the train where you never know who you're sitting next to. And, you know, I happen to be able to... I have the gift of gab. I can talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very social in that way. And I think it works for me. You know, I've never interned. I've worked. You know, I work. I cannot express how much that means to just always be available. You know, when I was starting out doing anything, I never had a job title because I was always available to anything that moved me.
Right.
You know, if I helped a friend design their house, I wasn't an interior designer. You know, if I helped a friend braid a hair, I wasn't a hairstylist. You know, it was like, I was just always available, huh?
You do hair?
No, I don't. I make myself available for anything that moves me, you know, anything that excites me. Like, even when you reached out and were like, oh my God, I would love to interview you. And I'm like, fuck me. You know, but it's interesting. And, you know, from this, somebody might reach out and be like, oh my God, I love the way that you talk. Doesn't make me a motivational speaker, but it makes me available.
Right.
And I always make myself available to things. I think we know we're interested in when we aren't. And most of the... I will say that everything that I do lend myself to meets at a point of some sort of style or creativity or art. I'm very moved by people's talents. And I think that I navigate towards that in people, regardless of what it is. Like, you'd be surprised, like, the talents that we just naturally have, but that's what draws me to people. And I think that making myself available through those, people see my talents. And I like to say that I've worked to have an expensive opinion.
Okay.
And that's really where I land. I know the value of my opinion. When someone wants it, I know how to explain to them what it would cost to share it with them and how I can help. What makes me an asset to their art, you know, through mine. And I think that, that's what it is.
That is something I am personally working on right now.
Yeah, it's the valued opinion. Like, honestly, like, even in creative fields, you know, I could put a girl in a yellow dress. Somebody else could put a girl in a blue dress. Neither one is wrong. But my opinion has a value to it versus this person's opinion. Therefore, someone would ask me, oh, so-and-so wore striking yellow versus this person put her in blue. You know, it's just that I work to have a valued opinion in whatever I do and work with. Yeah, I know you feel me. Yeah, I know you get it.
And it's important.
Oh, it's extremely important.
Especially in a time where, like, sometimes people don't, they don't always value the arts. And being able to, you know.
They don't value people's time.
Clearly say, hey, this is why X, Y, Z.
This is what I do.
This is what I do. This is why this is my rate.
Mm-hmm.
My rate is my rate.
Yeah. Look at World Wide West. Like, huge man in entertainment. No formal title, but could pick the phone up and call Jay-Z. Could pick the phone up and link this person to that person. it's that's his talent, but he also knew what he was worth. He knows what he's worth. He knows the value of his connections. He knows the value of his Rolodex and all of that. He makes it work for them. I find that to be very important, no matter what it is, what I do. You know, I take my value from job to job, talent to talent, person to person.
And how could you recommend, I almost said advice, how could you, what recommendation would you give to someone that is looking to better be able to, I guess, explain their value?
How would I be able to help someone understand their value?
Help others understand.
I think that you, when you say yes to something, you have to mean it. If you accept something that you don't want to do, it builds resentment. You know, whenever you take a job, like somebody could say, if you have been working for $200 a day, let's just say, somebody offers you $100, you might be in tough times. So you're like, ugh, you know, I could really use the $100. So I usually been getting two, but la 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 la. The moment you say yes to the job, you're now going to resent it. Because everything that they ask you to do, you're going to constantly think about the other 100 that you've been doing. So I think that it's very important to understand the power of no. To understand no. I would rather not lend myself to this and be available for something that I know I'm worth than to sell myself down and not give you all of me for that lesser, you know. And I think that that's very important. I understand that now. I understand when somebody calls me or sends me an amazing, beautifully worded email brief and then tells me that they don't have a budget to pay me to do whatever. And, you know, I completely understand it. But that opportunity, while it's not a bad opportunity, it's just not an opportunity for me. This is an opportunity for someone that needs to learn what their value is. So they can jump into the thing, you know, and they can get their feet wet and understand what this job is about or whatever the job might be. You know, in that moment, you then start to understand what you're worth. You know, one of my managers used to say it's called operational cost. You know, and I love that word because it was like, he would talk about Uber and eating and all this other kind of stuff that I would usually pay for out of my budget. He's like, no, these are things that need to be taken care of. These are operational costs. These are things that are required for me to do this job. And then you start understanding that. And then you know your value. You know what's required of you. You know what you're going to offer when someone offers you. And I think that when you know and you don't receive it, you know how to say no from, you know, doing enough work.
Okay. Have you ever get to a point where it's like, okay, I know my value. I'm turning things down because I don't feel like I feel like I'm worth more, but I still need money.
Yeah.
I'm turning everything down. Right? You know, is there a point where
it's a tricky place, because then I think that's when you get creative. You know, that's when you start to get creative, and the universe is always listening. The universe always has an ear to the ground, some way, somehow, and like an opportunity always finds itself. You might not know the payout instantly when you're having a conversation, but the universe is like always listening. And there are sometimes you do have to bite the bullet. Sometimes you really do. It's just that resentment comes quick.
Yeah.
You know, when you know that you have to do it. You know, you were forced to say yes. Because no is what you wanted to say. Mm-hmm. But you understand that right now I gotta eat. That phone needs to be paid. That cell phone needs to be paid, or people can't call me for work. You know, if I don't take this little scrum job to pay this phone bill, when the big opportunity comes, they can't get through.
Right.
So it's like you do have to make yourself available. Like going back to, you know, what I said, you have to make yourself available for something. And then understanding that maybe this little job that you did take that you hated was a stepping stone to be available for the bigger, you know, it's like an optimism thing.
Yeah.
It's tricking yourself into just knowing the bigger picture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Got you. Okay. And so what advice would you give an artist that is looking to build a business, to get where you are now?
I don't know where the fuck I'm at now. Damn, so. I would say, like, if I could give the advice that I would give myself, actually, to just lend to someone else, is narrow it down. Have a laser focus on what it is that you want. Listen to your heart. Listen to your heart. You know, you know which way you want to go. You know certain things. Don't fight those instincts. You know, don't come up with, I think as humans and just people, we're quick to come up with a reason to just not, or a reason to go this way, or like your friend, a reason to stay with this man. We come up with all of these excuses to just go against what we just know and love and our heart is telling us to do. And even to myself, I'm working on like getting that laser focus. And if you have that, the path is just very seamless, because you're going to be doing so much that you're not going to realize the progress you've made. But take that time. Stop to sit down and be like, where's my work would be? Or, you know, I did this, I did that. But then say, now what? You know, who's next? What's next? You know?
I got you. I love it. I love it. I love it. So, you kind of already answered that question in that. I'm going to say,
nailing this. Nailing
it. I know. Jesus. Dang. What? Is there anything else? Well, I was going to ask, what advice would Rick now give advice to Rick when you first began this journey?
What advice would I give younger Rick? Trust yourself. Trust yourself. I used to seek validation from other people a lot. And I think that, you know, when we were in balls and when we would go to like competitions and voguing, it was always about the admiration of the crowd. We're like superstars, you know, in our world. But it is a superficial world, you know, that we would be in, like dancing in competitions. It wasn't anything. But I would say to trust me. Don't go to this next person and that person and all of that kind of stuff. I would also tell myself, be prepared for social media. You know what I mean?
Be prepared. Stay no one was
strong.
Ready.
Stay strong, because social media is coming. And build that core. You know, I think that I wish that I would have had a tighter core when I was younger, that I didn't have to acquire it over time. I wish that, like, you know, when I was younger, I had the core that I have now to just be stronger. But you know, you have to have life, you know, life has to happen. So it'd be hard to give myself any other advice but that than to just trust myself.
I love it. Oh, so true.
It is.
You're just talking to me. I know when you go to church and you're like, the pastor is talking to you.
Yes, that fuck your right to you.
That, I feel like this entire episode has just been that. Like, oh my God, I didn't even know I needed this. I thought that I was helping y'all. I was helping myself. I didn't even know I needed this.
I'm helping me. You know what the funny thing about like conversations like this, what I find so beautiful, is that I wouldn't have this conversation with myself. You know what I mean? I'm having it with you, so I get to hear myself. Yeah. I get to say to someone else something that I need to hear. Like, you know how we give everybody advice? And like, I'm giving you advice, bitch, and I need it. You know? I'm sitting there like, girl, you know damn well you don't need to. Meanwhile, I'm over there like, jam. You know what I mean? So So it's like I find those things, it's almost therapeutic to say it out loud, you know, to remind yourself in a way, you know, the things that I'm saying while you think it's helping you, you're helping me, you know.
I love it.
Each one teach one sis.
Yes. Yo, we're gonna like take a little skirt. I want to hear about the Vogue game.
Oh,
where is that? Like that? Yeah, well, I'm.
Well, ballroom is huge right now. Ballroom is blowing the fuck up.
I like the dance community. I'm the one that's probably nothing. I don't know about. I know about Vogue, but I don't necessarily know the history.
Yeah, like, cool.
It's
so like it's, balls literally were black and people of color,
mm-hmm.
and could like gay people. We used it. It was a place that we went for family, you know. Houses were formed through families and they didn't, but we would compete and, you know, different categories, whether it be like runway, face, fashion, body, performance just happened to be my lane. And it was like Vogue came from literally like poses in magazines, and you would compete against each other in a way of like throwing shade with your body and like, you know, fiercest pose, or, you know, like how you would see models in magazines, like this pose to that pose to that pose. And then it's evolved now. But yeah, it was, it's almost like an express, it's a huge expression, but it's a retaliation in a way. Also like social and all of that kind of stuff is deeply rooted in it, because it's a, you know, it's a suppressed people.
Yeah.
And it's a place that we go to let that out. And a lot of categories that came from ballroom were about us saying to the straight world, me too. You know, like we had categories like realness, where a person, were you unclockable? Where could you walk down the street and not be spooked for being gay? You know, that was like, that's a category. But it also is, like I said, it's a lot of them are saying to the straight world, the me too. And then, you know, you had dancers that dug into that community and pulled out, you know, Voguers and different things. And it's too, now it's like, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they like shows Pose. You know, I worked on Pose like season 2.
Do you know Blaine Krause?
To who?
Blaine Krause.
Blaine Krause, no.
He
was, I worked in costumes.
Okay.
Yeah. So like I worked in costumes, but it's available now. You know, it's people are yelling. I was telling a friend, I feel like right now we are experiencing our version of the 70s. You know, I felt like when, just through research, like the war and the things that were going on in the 70s, people retracted and everyone separated, but they stuck to their own and just were yelling and rebelling. And I think that that's what's happening now. You know, everyone is in their own niche and rebelling and fighting and expressing themselves just blatantly loud, so that it's very unapologetic. This is who we are, you know, your blackness, your queerness, your whatever, you know, you're putting it in somebody's face and you're just saying, this is me. You know, people are going to work having conversations with about the hair that grows naturally from their head.
Ciao.
You know, it's like it's unreal, but it also is just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm not cutting my hair to graduate from your school or to work in your office. This is me, you know, and this is what I bring to the table. And I think a lot of it, but like balls are in a way kind of connected to that kind of activism in a way, I feel like.
Yeah.
Love?
Yes. So you started, is that 17?
Yeah, I was 17. Vogue. I just put a picture up on my IG looking like a little tenderoni. I just won a ball. It's like, forgot what year it was. But yeah, it was just like, I started Voguing and really just took it to, I tell a lot of people's favorite Voguer. Good following, good representation in the ball community. My name was Ricky Allure in ball. I was part of the House of Allure. And you can go to YouTube and type that in. That shit is just videos. This is videos and videos and videos and videos and videos. But it's all in there, yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Kind of going on the nerdier side. I always wonder about your body. The thing, the way that y'all are like spinning and hitting death, I'm like,
how?
Are y'all in pain?
No.
Or even like now, down
the
line.
That's why I was asking about the knees.
I'm just like,
bitch, I can't lay out the way I used to. I don't know. I think it's a dance. It is a dance. You know, it's no different than break dancing. Any of that.
Do y'all probably like do y'all have self care? I'm just like
the dip. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Cut that leg and lay out. But it's
from tables and things.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a technique. I would say it's a technique that everybody, there is a kind of common vein through Vogue that we all look for and things. In like competition, we call it like the elements, the five elements of Vogue. But even that came about with time. It was more so just, there's a rhythm to it, a specific music and all that kind of stuff. It's how you catch it and how you tell your story through the dance. It's very interesting, yeah. But yeah, you get bad knees.
I used to be like, what? I'm praying for all of y'all.
Let's pray for my knees.
Yo! Or here's my number.
Yeah.
Right. Let me know.
I make house calls.
Oh my gosh. This has been so great. And that opening, you just get so much wisdom.
I didn't know I had so much to give. And I love it. Like, it also helps us get to know each other too. It's like two people. Like you said, we're kind of still strangers, but familiar in the same voice. You know what I mean? Like through IG and all of that, we kind of use to know each other. We get to know each other, but it's almost surface.
Yes.
So now it puts a little more context to who I am, who you are.
Yes. Oh, and to go back, because the interview I had for you, I met him at Corner Social.
Mm-hmm.
And I was dancing, and he was like, hey, I'm a videographer. So for those of you, I met Rick at Row House.
Row House, yeah.
And I was at the bar eating my $25 chicken meal, and I understand why chicken and broccoli and mashed potatoes cost $25. I had just moved to New York.
She rich.
I'm not. That financial aid when you first start grad school, you know.
Bourgeois nasty.
You know?
Bourgeois nasty.
No, I'm like ordering in bulk from Costco, because we got to make it work.
Yes, it was. It was a Row House.
But I had the whole thing of twerk from home, and we just started talking. I never forget, because you had on a fur. You had on like, was it cheetah?
Yes, I have a cheetah.
Yes,
I have a cheetah fur baseball jacket.
I know his closet, y'all.
And then we started chopping it up. We started chatting shit.
And I just remember, you know, this was supposed to be. I haven't done it yet. I had a whole plan. A twerk charity event.
Yes.
Yeah, and you were like, it could be cut twas the night, twerk for a cause.
Yes.
And I started.
Wow.
I started doing classes called Twerk from Home, and I was merging, like Eric and Nob, like stuff from physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I was merging that with twerk, or I would do moves and be like, okay, this is how you can have a stronger
mixing
core, or if you're picking up
therapy.
You know what I mean? And I suppressed it for a while, because as a dancer, first of all, as a dancer from the South, twerk and ride now, all these things are very big, and I was almost anti.
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of like, I'm not like, that's not dance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To me, it was, that's not dance. We're going to do ballet, we're going to do modern, we're going to do hip-hop, but I'm not, especially I was working with kids,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to teach this 7-year-old girl to be in the squat. You know what I mean? That's just not me.
Shaking her ass.
You know? And they be out there, and they be loving that, especially with the majorettes. 5-year-old. No one can see me. I'm going to give you full out routine right now. No one can see it. It's just audio, Sherelle. And then I became open to it. And I began realizing, you know, these things, you know, it's something to be shameful about. This is so a part of our culture. And at this point, when it comes to health and exercise, everyone's not going to like the gym. And this this is a way for me to bring good quality, you know, fitness to my community.
And also giving the people it's a fresh way to like introduce fitness.
You know, and I had the whole thing too. I was like, oh, well, other people are doing twerk classes.
Yeah.
But also
original.
Other people didn't become a doctor. Who else has a doctor that's going to tell them to go twerk?
Twerk, right. No.
And then be like, oh, this is how, you know, if you're picking up something heavy or if you need to support your core.
Maybe city girls have a doctorate.
Do they really?
Meg did no.
Oh, wait, what?
I don't know. Meg the Stallion, you know, there's a doctorate.
Meg's in school. Okay, that's hilarious. But yeah, so I'm going to bring it back.
Good.
Not yet. Like I have so many other things right now. But
when it cultivates, it'll just come.
Yes. Yes, yes. I also wanted to do you know Kid Fury? You know about Kid Fury?
I know about Kid Fury. I don't know too much.
Yeah. Well, when I had that conversation with you and I was listening to his podcast, The Read with Crystal, and they always did like a cheery toy drive. Mm-hmm. And I also knew he liked to twerk, and I was like, yo, it would be mad cool. And I was like, I don't even have to get paid. And, you know, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, just fun.
Fun, or I get a list of people that I can just reach out to. And you come, and you bring a toy, and you get a free twerk class.
Oh,
I've never seen that.
I've never seen it either. Especially the twerking part. Like
toys for tap. Like,
because twerk is such a universal kind of like dance now.
Universal now, but also, you know, it's only, you know, it stems back from, you know, the traditional West African dance. These movements and these gyrations. That's how we communicated. That's how, you know, it was dances of
body
fertility.
Language,
yeah. You know, and my, you know, Uncle Luke came and things became like. Sexualized it and it's continued to grow from there.
Baby started getting made. Yeah.
But, you know, and I also have to talk about that too. Like, its roots. Like, these, you know what I mean? These movements.
Giving
these,
them the stem from context.
From something. You know what I mean?
Especially the context between like where these moves derive from and all of that kind of stuff.
You know what I mean? Little
information.
Like, oh, they're just trying to be sexy. And like, no, this isn't just, you
it's
know.
Culture.
It's culture to it, you know. So, I forgot where I was even going with that. Oh, but that's how I met you. I'm so happy we had this. Thank you so much for coming on.
I love you. It was amazing. Thank you for asking me these things, opening my mind up to it.
Yeah.
I hope I was able to help anyone, but even if myself.
Most definitely. So, Rick, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Mr. Dress Code, MrDressKode. And Facebook is Rick Johnson.
Oh, love it, love it. Follow my man.
Follow your boy.
He's out here. Thank you all for tuning into this week's episode.
Bye, folks.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Art of Body Language podcast. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to my show. If you enjoyed this episode and you believe it would benefit an artist that you know, please be sure to share it with them. As always, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Make sure to follow me on Instagram at smile_love_lift. If you'd like to connect further, you can also email me at theartofbodylanguage@gmail.com. Thank you, and make sure to tune in to our next episode. Have a beautiful day.